Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
Grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths.
What are you drinking today?
I knew it. I knew it was coming.
Well, you have the unique thing.
I do have the unique thing. I have the brand new Bang Candy Apple Crisp, and it literally tastes like apple juice to me that's been carbonated. But it's not so bad for me, if that makes any sense.
Are you saying that because apple juice has a lot of sugar?
I'm saying that because as a child, I had so much apple juice that I would get really bad cavities. I had an affinity for juice as a young child. It's fine. What are you drinking?
Cherry Blade Lemonade Bang, which is the one that tastes like Gushers to me.
Awesome. We do have more Bones Coffee flavors coming to try.
We got big bags of the ones we like.
Well, we got one big bag of the one you like. We got a big bag of the red velvet cake because it was on sale, and I think they were doing a blowout from
Valentine's Day.
And then I got another sample pack of all the different flavors from that.
That we haven't tried yet.
That we have not tried yet. We are not endorsed by them in any way, shape, or form. We're just trying all their flavors out because we can.
Most of them anyway. Some of them were like,
yeah, some of them were like, you know what? No. But anywho's it, this week we have Norse. You got a bit of a hefty thing going on over here.
Well, we'll see how long it actually takes me to say it.
Okay.
Sometimes it looks like I have a lot, and then I end up, like, reading through it really fast.
Gotcha. I was just kind of like, when you're doing your thing, this week's art's gonna be, well, we'll see how it goes, because we got an iPad, so I can finally use Procreate. And I can make art with it, and I'm really excited. I'm just waiting for my stylus for the iPad to come in so I can play with that. And hopefully the art turns out really well for this week.
Yeah, so it may or may not end up being digital instead of pen and watercolor.
Right.
But, you know, the last couple weeks have also been a little off-brand because instead of using Micron pens for, like, Medusa and the Tlaloitteg, I used colored lead pencils.
Yes, they came out gorgeous.
Underneath the watercolor. So I do like the sharp black lines on some of them, but I just felt like they turned out a little bit better when I was like imagining them and then them going onto the paper. They came out more how I was picturing them using the colored pencils. So I really like this. And they don't smear with, like, real graphite lead pencils will smear, which is why we use the Micron pens, because the water from the watercolor doesn't make it bleed. But these I was able to paint directly on top of and turned out really good.
My whole, like, arm ends up covered in lead by the time I've, like, drawn anything.
Yeah. And then you have to erase literally the entire page after you line it, because it's just a gray smear
everywhere. And you don't even realize how gray it's gotten all over the paper until you start, like,
erasing
it. And you realize, like, oh, like, there's, like, a whole layer of this on top of the regular paper as it is.
Yeah.
Anywho, so what are you talking about this week?
So, as is the case, that sometimes happens. We choose a topic to discuss that ends up not having a lot of information. So I wanted to just discuss Skull and Hati, but it turned out that there isn't like an entire episode worth of information on the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Skull, Hati, Wolves, and the Bunny Holes that I came across while researching them.
Cool.
So Skull and Hati are both male wolves. Their father is Fenrir, and their mother is most often referred to as a giantess and witch that lives in Yarnvíðr, or Ironwood, to the east of Midgard. In these, she is unnamed. We know Fenrir is the father because Hati is known as Hati Hrothvitnisson, or the son of Hrothvitnir, which is another name used for Fenrir.
Mm.
It's speculated by some that she is the giantess Angrbotha, who was also Fenrir's mother.
I see.
Yes. As we know from previous episodes, just because the term used is giants, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are literally giant. However, I'm gonna believe that these two wolves
are
indeed giants.
Yeah.
If they're large enough to swallow the sun and the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So Skull's name means mockery or treachery, while Hati's name means enemy. Some believe Skull may be another name for Fenrir, and Hati may be the same character as Managamr, which means Moon's Hound. Skull and Hati are known for chasing the sun and moon, but it's more than that. They're actually chasing chariots driven by Sol and Mani that move the sun and moon across the sky. Most translations say that Skull chases the sun and Hati chases the moon. However, this one website, NorseMythology.com, who does not have very fond feelings for Snorri Sturluson, proposes another possibility. Their website states that they believe the wolves chase the opposite celestial body because the word used for Hati's prey is breather, which means bride, and thus is feminine, as Sol and the sun are feminine, while Skull chases Gothi, meaning priest, which is a masculine word, making Mani and the moon his enemy. The English translation of the Grímnismál says, Skull is the name of the wolf who follows the shining priest into the desolate forest, and the other is Hati, who chases the bright bride of the sky. Either way, the brothers Skull and Hati will pursue the sun and moon, chariots, drivers, and all, until Ragnarok, when they catch and swallow them, bathing the worlds in darkness.
Damn.
Now, as I mentioned briefly earlier, Sol and Mani are the two people that drive the chariots that move the sun and the moon. Sol moves the sun, and Mani moves the moon. There are a couple of varying origin stories for Sol and Mani. One is that they are divinities that were created at the same time as the universe, and they didn't know what their purpose was. So the gods got together and made different parts of the day and year, and thus they learned their purpose in keeping time. We know from writings that Sol's horses are named Arvakr, meaning early riser, and Ulsvithr, meaning swift. But we do not know Mani's horses' names. Another origin story is that there was a man named Mundilfari, and he had two children that he named after the sun and moon because he was proud of how beautiful they were. Before this, the sun had been a spark from Muspelheim, and it was drawn across the sky by a driverless chariot. The gods were outraged by his arrogance, so they punished him by forcing his children to drive the chariots. While there isn't a lot of information on Mundilfari, we do know that Sol is married to a man named Glenr, which means opening in the clouds. They also say that Svalin rode with Sol in the chariot and held a shield between the chariot and Earth to protect Earth from the heat of the sun.
Damn.
So that the Earth would not be engulfed in flames.
Okay.
Now, the website's issue with Snorri was nobody really can be certain what stories he was diligently putting down as they were and which ones he put a little bit of a Christian flair to. So that was their issue. But Sol and Mani seem likely to be pre-Christian in origin because rock carvings and other artifacts show the concept of chariots pulling the sun and the moon. And these artifacts are from the Norse Bronze Age, from 1700 to 500 BCE. There was also a story I read about how Skull and Hati were placed in the sky, and that is this story. But I didn't see this mentioned as, like, directly from an Edda, so I don't know if this is something that came down as, like, folklore after the fact. So this says, when Fenrir was chained, Hati and Skull were the only ones who came to defend him. Loki and Angrabotha themselves did not interfere, knowing the necessity of the binding. But his young sons tumbled forth in a vain attempt to free their father. Which is just so sad, because the versions I've heard of his chaining didn't mention any babies.
No mention that's so sad. Of them.
Instead, they were captured by the Aesir, and Odin put them to use, bespelling them as he had bespelled the great snake. Sol and Mani had often been known to dawdle, or change their course, which meant that the days and nights were not always dependable and on time. Mani was especially bad at this, as he liked to look down on what was happening, but the adventures played out below his feet enchanted and delayed him. There had been complaints about this from many mouths, and so Odin put the two wolves into the sky as a way to make the chariots run on time. Skoll was bespelled to chase Sol's chariot as a dog herds sheep, keeping it to its path, and Hati was similarly charged with herding Mani's dog cart. While they do not spend all of their time in the sky, when the sun and moon are on time and stick to their schedules, the wolves can run free on the earth below. But if either is late, they are lifted into the sky to do their job. Skoll is the quieter of the two and says little. He does not love the involuntary nature of his job, although he gets some fun out of racing Sol. But he is aware that it is a better deal than the one that befell his father. Hati is more outgoing and more moody. He veers from cheery mischief to wrath, and deeply resents the spell that puts him so often in the sky. Both are aware that if Ragnarok comes, they will be able to chase and kill Sol and Mani, and free themselves from Odin's spell, and they look forward to that day.
Oh, damn.
That is from a website called northernpaganism.org. But that is the only place that I saw that version of the story of how they got up into the sky, and it was like a job.
Okay.
Kind of like how Odin was like, Hel, you're going to be in charge of Helheim, and your mother, you're going to be tossed in the sea. He was like, these monsters can go into the sky and chase the sun and the moon. Other wolves in Norse mythology include Fenrir, who Eliza has discussed previously, along with two wolves that sit by Odin's side in his hall. Their names are Geri and Freki. As wine is all the nourishment that Odin needs, he gives his food to these two wolves. They are also said to traverse battlefields and eat the bodies of those that have fallen in battle. Wolves are generally considered symbols of chaos.
That was an octopus look. She's looking right at me like I am a symbol of chaos. But I did kind of look at somebody at work. Not maybe this last week, but a few weeks ago, and I was like, I am chaos incarnate. Let it happen.
So I'm not wrong.
I mean,
I'm not wrong. Anyway, so they're symbols of chaos, which isn't surprising, because a few of them are direct descendants of Loki. Ulfr is the word for wolf, and it has positive connotations in the Norse language. It is used in some people's names, whereas Vagr has negative connotations, and it's where we get the word warg. That draws us into the present. Tolkien was inspired by these stories, since Hati and Skoll are considered wargs. And from this, he created characters that were large, evil wolves that aided the orcs.
Oh, that explains those ones. I was like, what the f-?
You're like, I know this word.
Yeah, that's, I'm like, where do I know this from? Where do I know this from?
We were just watching The Hobbits the other day.
Yeah, we have not watched the third one, though, because that one makes me sad. So I've been postponing it, and I'm like thinking about just jumping over to Lord of the Rings.
And since then, since Tolkien put them in his stories, many people since have been inspired by him and expanded on these, so now they can be found in different games and movies. The lore of Skoll and Hati can be found during the gameplay of God of War. Atreus will come upon historical art and translates the stories for Kratos. And I found this out. You know how like a lot of moons are named after, like, especially Jupiter's moons are named after Zeus's flings.
Okay.
So there are two moons of Saturn that are named Hati and Skoll.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
And then the last interesting tidbit I found was this. This version I found on mythcrafts.com, since I can't find the original. And this is a direct quote from their website. There are reports of folkloric traditions where people would bang drums or pots and pans during an eclipse and scare away the wolves, which, given the mythology, suggests they believed an eclipse was caused by either Skoll catching Sol in the event of a solar eclipse, or Hati catching Mani during a lunar eclipse.
Jeebus.
I think this is cool because, one, it means they believe they could stop the wolves if they were loud enough, and two, it's similar to how I try to catch Dova's attention when she's got something that she shouldn't have.
Oh my god.
And that's just, like, shows you... that people are all have always been people.
Yes.
But I had originally seen that information on a different website, and I didn't think to, like, write it down. And then I wrote everything out, and I was like, I want to find that information because that's really interesting that they would do that, like make noise to get the wolves to drop the sun and the moon. And then when I went back, I found on Mythcrafts instead of where I originally found it. I have no idea where I originally saw it. But yeah, so that's the wolves. And obviously they're going to be wolves on the art. But other than there being wolves, I don't know what it's going to look like yet.
Oh my god. You know what's sad?
What?
Is it just dawned on me that we are doing wolves for this week.
Yeah? Why is that?
It's sad that it took me this long to figure it out.
I've literally been talking about it.
I
know. It for...
I was looking at wolves last night on Pinterest. So this is what I did. I went on iPad and I put Pinterest on there so I could find like reference photos to use while I'm using Procreate. And I was like, I'm gonna look at wolves. I don't think we're gonna do any wolves anytime soon, but I'm gonna do them. I'm gonna look at them anyway because I love wolves. And then you're just like, and we're gonna do wolves this week. And I was like,
literally just spent 20 minutes talking about Skull and Hati, the wolves of Norse mythology.
God, I feel so dumb.
And
I'm such a dumbass. Just got it. Listen. Listen, I've been trying to hold on to this story this whole time you've been talking because I'm trying to remember it. No.
I thought you wrote it down.
No. I'm not going by the way I wrote it down.
Okay.
I can only think of so much at once. And then, like, I'm listening to you talking about the wolves, and then it just isn't clicking. I don't know why it didn't click. Because I just watched you paint. I was just thinking about, like, oh, she made these really pretty cherry blossom thing for next week's thing. What is she gonna do for this one? And I'm not thinking about the fact that we're talking about wolves.
We are.
Oh my god.
It's okay. So we're gonna take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back.
Today I'll be talking about the story of Frey and Gyrth, his Jotun wife.
Oh snap.
Yes. Now, before I get into the story, I want to give some background on Frey. For those that do not know about him, Frey is the brother of Freya, and was known for being mighty among the Vanir. So he was known for being handsome, noble, and a warrior. He made the seasons and the fields fertile. He had a sword so powerful it could fight all by itself. The golden bristle boar, which pulled his chariot named Gullinbursti, made by Brokk and Ithri, or Sindri, depending on the version, as we discussed in a previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had the foldable ship made by Ivaldi's sons called Skidbladner, the second biggest ship in Norse mythology, second to Naglfar, the death ship literally made of untrimmed fingernails.
I was just going to ask if
that
was...
It is exactly that ship.
I hate that ship.
Yeah. Frey also ruled the light elf realm known as Alfheim.
Really?
Yes. He also had a foot page that went by the name of Skirnir. I am not exactly sure what Skirnir is race or family-wise because in the Poetic Edda, he identifies himself as neither an elf, Vanir, or Aesir.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, this is how the story goes. Frey decides one day to go to Othin's Hall, which overlooks the Nine Realms. Now, the only reason I am telling the story this way is because I've literally listened to four or five different versions of this story, including the Poetic Edda translation, actually reading it, and I'm just gonna just tell it. Now, Othin's Hall was separate from Valhalla. This is the highest point that could see all nine realms, and it was called Hlidskjalf, spelled Hlidskjalf in various versions. So he goes up there and he looks to the north and he sees off in the distance a beautiful looking woman and she is raising her arms to open a door and the door is to her father's house in Jotunheim. And as she raises her arms, there's just so much brightness that's described to be shining from her that it brightens everything. And as she goes inside her father's hall, everything is dark. And as soon as he loses sight of her, Frey goes into a, as I can best describe it, a dramatic depression. And to explain this, Frey is Njord's son. Njord, he's a god, who is the husband to Skadi.
Mm.
Anyway, so he's so upset that he goes back to his father's house. He does not eat or drink for 3 days and nights before his parents are like, can someone go check on him? We think he's mad. And so they look at his foot page, Skirnir, and they're like, can you go check on your homeboy? Because we don't want to ask him. And Skirnir's like, I don't want to ask him. I don't want to be the subject of his anger.
Right.
However, you guys are, like, above me in status, so I have to obey you. So he goes to Frey, and he's like, yo, what's wrong, man? And Frey's like, I found the most beautiful woman, but I cannot have her, and no one will approve of our marriage. And Skirnir is like, well, how about I just, you know, help you out? And he's like, well, if you, like, go over and ask for her hand in marriage for me, that'd be great. And Skirnir's like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm not gonna just do this for free.
Oh my gosh.
I want your sword. And Frey just... And before... Let me explain this. In different versions, almost every version, Frey's like, I would give anything to have her hand in marriage. He's like... so extra about this.
Sounds extremely desperate.
Oh my gosh. Like, super extra. And he's, like, explained as being handsome and loved by people, but he wants her, specifically. So he doesn't bat an eye to give this sword to Skirnir. And Skirnir is like, okay, I also need a horse. So he's like, okay, here's a horse. Skirnir goes to Jotunheim, and he notices that there are these guard dogs in front of Girth's house. Girth is the name of the woman he saw. And he goes to a random guy over there in Jotunheim. He's like, yo, how can I get past these dogs? And the guy's like, do you have a death wish? You trying to die, bruh? And he's like, no. So he just takes his horse to feed just outside the house. And then it causes a huge stir. And Girth hears it from inside. And she's like, hey, what's causing all the ruckus? And someone's like, there's just this guy outside with a horse. So Girth goes to check it out. And she's like, can I help you? And he's like, oh, I'm just passing by. And she's like, are you an Aesir or a Vanir or somebody that I would be against? And he's like, oh, I'm none of those things. But I'd like to come inside. And she's like, sure, I'll give you something to drink. So he goes in.
Super sus.
Super sus. He goes in and he's like... So, my lady, there's this dude. His name's Frey. He's a god. Yeah? Super pretty, beautiful, chef's kiss. I will give you 11 golden apples.
Ethan's apples?
Yes. For your hand in marriage to this dude named Frey. She's like, I don't need those apples. Now, before I go further, there are 3 different versions of how she reacts, but I am going to be speaking on the Poetic Edda version that I read, because I feel like that's going
to
speak
closest to the original.
Closest to the original that I could, like, kind of explain. So he's like, okay, I got 11 apples. She's like, I don't need no 11 apples. I am not marrying him. And he's like, well, how about I give you Othin's ring that he put on his son's funeral pyre? And there's 8 more of those rings, and it just keeps on making more rings. If anybody listened to the last episode where I talked about Ivaldi's sons and Brock and Sindri, it's that same ring that Othin received that he is speaking of. And she's like, no, I don't want that ring. I don't want to marry this guy. And then he's like, fine. So instead of offering good things to her, he decides to start giving a list of curses upon Girth. And it's at this point that it's very controversial, because essentially he's telling Girth, with these curses that he is bestowing upon her, you will be destitute, you will be stripped of everything, you will not be able to bear children, you will not be able to marry, you will have terrible living conditions, you will be taken by this troll down to hell, and you will be, like, in a confinement, like, all sorts of things. I'm not gonna list the whole bits there. You can read that on the Poetic Edda if you'd like. But essentially, it's like kind of horrendous. He's like, I won't give you these curses if you give me a reason to take them back. And then she's just kind of like, here, let me pour you some mead and give you a horn, and you can go on your merry way. And he was like, I'm not leaving unless I have an answer from you. And she was like, I will meet Frey in 9 nights at a place called Bari.
Skirnir takes it, and he goes to Frey, and Frey's like, tell me what's going on! I sent you on this quest, tell me it's good, and it's fruitful. And Skirnir is like, well, she has accepted your hand in marriage, but you have to wait 9 nights to meet her in Bari. The poem ends with Frey being like, I've gotta wait 3 whole nights and days to see this girl, and it's just, like, so long. So, before we go into, like, how terrible that sounded about Frey, because it's like he's supposed to be this beautiful, handsome fella, and he's just, like, really upset that he has to wait to be with this lady.
Who's being forced to marry him.
Who's being technically forced to marry him in the original Poetic Edda version. So, there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah, in this. So, in the Neil Gaiman version, I realized it was a lot more kid-friendly. Because in that version, Skirnir goes to Gyrth, and she's just like, I would love to marry him. And then they just go off and be fruitful and have babies, and it's fine. But in almost every other version I've heard or seen, it is not like that at all. And she's like, oh no, I'm not fucking marrying him. And then he's like, oh, I will fucking curse you. And she's like, okay, I'll go. So in the Poetic Edda translated by Dr. Jackson Crawford, here it is hinted that the poem is an allegory where Frey, the god of agriculture, sends the Shining One, which is the literal meaning of Skirnir, which is possibly the sun, to prep the thawing earth, which is symbolized by Gyrth, which the name may be related to the word for farm.
Okay.
For the first sowing at the end of winter. That is what the allegory might be for.
Okay.
So, also, both versions in Poetic Edda and the Gaiman version has Gyrth tell Skirnir she will meet Frey 9 nights, but Frey complains that he must wait 3 nights. This is a possible reflection of an old custom compelling men to wait for what is called a hainot, literally meaning marriage night, which lasted 3 days before they could consummate an agreed-upon marriage. Also, in the Jackson Crawford version, there is a footnote with the sword stating that it would only fight by itself if carried by a wise man, which I thought was kind of interesting. And here's the other kicker. It's noted that this sword that Frey gives to Skirnir is so powerful that it can fight Surtur, the fire giant, which is what Frey fights in Ragnarok. And because he doesn't have the sword, he dies. It's literally what costs Frey's life in Ragnarok, is by just willingly giving the sword to Skirnir.
So that he could be with the woman.
So he could be with Gyrth. And Skirnir just fucks off with the sword. He never gives the sword back. Like, he's just like, okay, this is my payment. It's mine. I've heard this from the Neil Gaiman version, the Poetic Edda, online through Wiki. I've also listened to an audiobook version of it. So, like, I've heard many versions. And it's just interesting because in the Neil Gaiman version, Skirnir and Frey originally go to Valhalla first to make sure that Othin's not at his high point. And they notice that Othin's not eating the meat and giving it to his wolves and only drinking the wine. And that's where Frey tells Skirnir, oh, this is why Othin's not eating the meat and he doesn't need the meat because he has this special wine. And I was just reading that thinking, I know where that's from. I know who's talking about that this week. So I thought it was funny that kind of
right, and
intermingled.
I don't think you said it during the recording, but didn't you also mention to me when we were just talking about it that the high point was like off limits? They weren't supposed to be up there or something?
So in the
first... Or was he not supposed to be looking towards Jotunheim? Was
so here's the other thing. In other versions that I've read, Frey states to Skirnir that it was like him not being able to have Gyrth was his punishment for going up there. And that he will forever be paying for it because he shouldn't have gone to the High Seat to look upon the Nine Realms.
Okay.
Because he shouldn't even be with her because she's a Jotun.
Right.
And the Aesir and the Jotuns are not so, you know...
compatible.
Right. They kind of, like, I mean, Thor likes to just kill them whenever he feels like it. That whole deal. But yeah, that's that story of Frey getting the hand of Gyrth. It was very controversial because of that bit where it's like she's literally being manipulated against her will to be married to him. And she initially tells him, it's like, I've got everything I could want in this hall by my father.
Mm-hmm. Why would I want to leave? And then he rings the string of curses, tells her exactly who he's going to have come get her and take her to hell. Mm-hmm. Like, names the person and everything. And you're just kind of like, damn, that's fucked up.
It is.
It is fucked up. I don't know what I'm going to draw for this, but I'm going to try my best. I might try drawing Frey.
I was going to say, you could draw Frey.
Yeah.
You could draw this sword that can fight for itself. You could draw Garth as she's doing the door.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of possibilities. Anywho's it. I'm really excited to be using Procreate. Normally what I do is I just take a sketchbook, I draw with pencil, then I go over the lines I like with the Micron pen, and then I erase everything that's with pencil, and then Leah...
That's me.
...does all the painting. But you know, hey, it's fine. I ordered a stylus, yeah, and the case yesterday, and it's supposed to be, like, it's already shipped. Shipped this morning, and I'm, like really excited about this.
Yeah, we were playing with the iPad last night. There's this really cool feature where you can have Procreate on half the screen and Google, like, image search on the other half. Mm-hmm. And you can drag a picture over and it'll make a palette off of those colors. So we were able to do that even though we didn't have the stylus.
Right.
So there were some things that we could look into and get the apps all ready, but we can't really play with it until we have that stylus.
Yeah, so I'm just like, oh my God. And it's in purple and teal, the case, which I'm really excited about. But anywho, but I do appreciate that we have so many different versions now to look at for reference. Like the actual Poetic Edda, we have the Norse Mythology by Neil Gaiman. I've got a lot more reference material other than just the internet, which is nice.
Right.
We went to Barnes & Noble last week. Yeah, it was last Saturday. And we got more mythology books, but they weren't mythology books so much on the topics we go over. It was like Egyptian mythology, Native American mythology. I look at it every morning and I'm like, oh my goodness, it's so pretty.
It's a hefty book.
It's a very big book and I'm really excited to open that bad boy up and read it.
So, reminders everybody, make sure to check out our art for this week's entities on our Instagram at Coffee Table Mythos. If you want to share any art of your own of these beings, make sure to use our hashtag Coffee Table Mythos so that we and our followers can check them out. As always, if you have any stories or requests, please email us at coffeetablemythos@gmail.com. And remember to mention if you want a shout out of either a name or handle, or if you'd like to remain anonymous. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Coffee Table Mythos. You can message us on here as well.
Check out our merch on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos. We are adding more listings as we research more beings and make more art. If you would like to donate to us, you can on anchor.fm/coffeetablemythos, or you can become a patron through patreon.com/coffeetablemythos. For right now, all donations will go to making this podcast better. Thank you so much for listening. Please give us a like, follow, subscribe, share, and review our podcast if you have the time. We are interested in what you have to say. This is Coffee Table Mythos. We'll catch you next time.